This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 247. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, our guests will be the Equi Ratings founders Deanne Byrne and Sam Watson, who will be giving us the latest statistics that they are presenting at the annual meeting. And we'll also hear from the outgoing president, Carol Kozlowski, who has been president from 2017 until, of course, this convention, where she hands over the reins to Max Corcoran. Carol will be joining us a little bit later on in the program. So let's first hear from Deanne and Sam about the Equi Rating statistics that they have gathered this year on the sport of eventing in the US. Deanne, that's a lot of statistics that you're collating.
Yeah, well, actually, it's not too bad. And once you're working with something that you enjoy, it tends to be a little bit easier. But we're lucky we have a big team. When we started out, Chris, it was just the two of us. And at that point, Sam was very much the man with the head for numbers. But luckily, I suppose in the, nearly 5 years now since we began the company, we've grown it. We've a team of analysts. So I'm lucky that it's not me that you're relying on for numbers. We've a big team behind us now.
All right. Well, let's, for the sake of those who are not too familiar with Equi Ratings, maybe new members, give us the elevator pitch, Adam, if you would. Explain exactly what it does.
About 5 years ago, Chris, we began to look at the growth of sports data across all of the other mainstream sports. And particularly in the US, people would be really familiar with it from baseball and basketball, and how people began to use numbers for a really wide range of things in sports. So when you're looking at your Olympic teams or your high performance teams, people began to see, well, where is that marginal gain available? How can I really use some of my own numbers as target setting or goal setting or understanding where I need to reach in the sport? And that was just the high performance side. There's also a huge media angle to using the numbers. In, for example, imagine watching the 100 meters and not having the time coming up and just watching people run. It's a completely different sport without the context of knowing what the targets are, where people are currently performing, what a world record is, what a really long streak in the sport would be. So from a media point of view, that became important as well. And as we went through the journey, we actually stumbled on the area of risk management, and we began to spot that actually there were certain trends emerging in tracking horses that weren't performing well, and how sometimes that helped us predict areas where risk was higher and that we needed to, you know, help develop products and learnings, I suppose, for the sport that could help us work with federations around risk. So it was really from looking at other sports, Chris, that we began to see that actually numbers weren't really being used in eventing on a widespread level. And then over the last 5 years, we've developed a lot of different services around that. We've grown to work with huge number of teams, of federations, of different media organizations, generally across those three areas around the world. And then expanding now in 2020 into training services and a couple more, so exciting times.
Sam, as a rider, of course, you watch how the federations move the goalposts. We've changed our initials now, beginning of this year. Has that impacted in any way the statistics, or it just means changing an initial here and there?
It's very interesting to measure the impact. The dressage multiplier, when that came out, I had always felt that the sport was heavily weighted towards dressage, and hoping that that would then counter that. But it's interesting when you actually start measuring it, in that it has reduced the impact of dressage slightly, but actually only by about 1%. Whereas, so dressage still generally across the entire sport, is at international level. Now it's even heavier at one day at national level, but it's still around 45% of the influence, which means there's only 55% of the influence left for the other two phases. And depending on which format of the sport you're at or which level, it could be the other phases. But the key, Chris, is when you it's only when you fully have a way of measuring these types of things can you fully grasp it. You're never too far away from your intuition. You know, there are many wise heads in the sport, and you have some of the best brains on that side of the Atlantic over there in the sport. And I enjoy reading a lot of the content that comes out of America about the sport. But actually, there are a couple of things that can surprise you, and then it can be great to, as I say, just have that measurement, because then you know that you're improving. You know that, okay, the dressage multiplier did do a little bit to bring back the influence of the jumping phases, but actually not half as much as we thought it would do. Tom McEwen could have still had two show jumps down in Poe and won that five star. And everyone talks about, oh, just how influential show jumping is now. And actually, perception and reality are sometimes a bit different. So it's important to measure.
Dom, let's talk about the overall stats that you produce, runs and the number of competitions, number of horses and riders and that sort of thing. Give us that basic introduction to what you do. By the end of the year, presumably, that's when you publish your end of year stats. Or do you have another calendar year we don't know about?
No, end of year tends to be, I suppose, well, working with the federations, it's different to what goes out publicly. So as you can imagine, whether it's risk management or whether it's tracking entries or whether it's tracking member engagement, they tend to be, much, much more regular than just annual meetings. And you'd work quite closely alongside a federation in the same way, Chris, as you would around financial management. Understanding your numbers, what levels entries are coming at, are entries up or down, where are falls coming, how did it compare to the previous years? That type of work is being done all around the world at all of the major federations now. It isn't just a case of how did we get on this year, no more than it would be with a business. Looking at the US then, kind of generally this year to look in terms of what will be presenting publicly and talking about publicly at the convention in Boston. We look at the first overall number will be how many runs have we had this year. That's always one that the federations will be interested in. We're just above the 40,000 mark. So up on 2018, which would be the good news from a federation point of view. And about 38,500 cross country runs, and that would be a key area we'd be looking at. How many went through to cross country, and then of course the other one, again linked to risk management, and this is an interesting one because it's not just trying to track who fell, you'd also be tracking are clear rates too high, and they've been quite steady in the US around that 76-77 mark. For the last number of years now. And again, that was the same this year, 76.9 in terms of how many people jump clear. One interesting one, Chris, that I think you'll like, or that people competing in the US will like, is when you actually track the dressage score of the entire US membership over the last, six seasons now. Certainly five seasons anyway. It has been 34 point something. That's adjusted now. I know the dressage has changed, certainly at the internationals, but taking into account that adjustment, this year was 34.5, but for every year in the last five, it's been 34 point something. So slightly down this year to 34.5. So if you're scoring 34, Chris, you are bang on the average of where the US members are if you take into account every level of the sport.
So you're breaking this down now across all levels and looking obviously for the USCA across national competitions. How else do you break those stats down, Dom?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. I mean, that's the kind of the general one. I think one of the interesting ones that we look at is when you break it down level by level. And that gets interesting because it allows us really to track and to see where a lot of the sport is happening. And it's a constant reminder to us that while we all focus on those top levels of the sport, we're going into an Olympic year, and again, there'll be a huge amount of focus on those 60 or so athletes who make it to Tokyo. Actually, the sport around the world, and the same in the US, is really made up of the lower levels. Beginner novice makes up about 20% of the runs in the US. Novice is almost 30%. And then training level is another 25%. So at those levels alone, you're looking at 3/4 of US eventing. And those little stats, very basic when you're just breaking down a percentage of starters at the different levels in the US. But it's a little reminder to us that, yes, we will have the big names, we will have the high performance squads, but it's a constant, yeah, constant reminder that actually 75% of the sport is taking place at training and below in the US, and there has to remain and be a push around the performance, given those riders and those owners, you know, access to different performance stats and different coverage in the media, because it really is not just in the US, but around the world, what's keeping the sport alive.
How does that compare with Europe then? Oh, let's take Britain, Dom.
Very similar, actually. Britain and Ireland would be both in that 75 to 80%. At Britain, it would, I suppose, at Britain, it would be in, it would be BE 80, BE 90, 100, and novice. And those levels of the sport would again be in around that 80% of the sport. And from our work in Ireland, it would be quite similar. So, yeah, it wouldn't be anything to worry about. It wouldn't be any kind of outlier. And as I say, yeah, around the world, it's that reminder that actually there is a huge, huge, in this case, three quarters of the sport taking place at those levels. So, as is normal with any professional, or in this case, I suppose not professional, but certainly at the very, very top, it would be, where you can see that there's a big focus on those riders, and rightly so. And the live streams and the commentary and the road to Tokyo will be big. But we shouldn't forget, and we should ensure that we provide the maximum opportunities, I suppose, and coverage to that huge portion of the sport.
Sam, as a rider, do you look at those best dressage scores and finishing scores and clear rounds? Does that lead your eye into analysing what's really come to the top? The cream always rises to the top, isn't it? Or do you look at that yourself as a rider?
It's really around what you're trying to achieve with each horse, because the horses that are sort of on a pathway towards championships or five star level, you're always keeping one eye on, you know, what do those top five finishing scores at that level look like? Sometimes, you know, for me, when I really became, sort of went from full-time riding to a semi-pro / amateur rider, really, in terms of starting a business and having the family and things like that, I said, right, if I have a couple of horses, I'm going to aim to be a team rider. And so I started to look at, you know, what's important there. And with team eventing, that clear cross country round is really, really important, because that seems to be what undoes most teams. Whereas when it comes to trying to win an individual competition, you've got to be looking around those 28 and below dressage scores. So, and then again, at lower levels, if you wanted to be competitive on this side of the water, certainly in Europe, where you've got Germany, where there's always very, very low scores, to win some of those lower level competitions, then you're thinking more towards 75% dressage, you know, which is down to a penalty score 25 and below. But you don't lose hope, and in that, if you have a horse who's not, if we were to look at the last four or five winners of badminton, they never started their career, and some of them actually, you know, Classic Moe would be a good example, never really got towards that 75%. Dressage anyway, and you see that actually what format of the sport would suit them. I use the numbers a lot for deciding where to compete horses. So I know that in the UK, an event like Chatsworth is a very good venue for a fast horse who's maybe not quite as strong at dressage, because they can make up penalties there. I always, off the top of my head, know that Bromont, which is the sort of sole, has been the sole Canadian international, and Fouché is now there at the low levels, but I know Bromont has always produced a very testing cross country as well. So you'd be keeping in the back of your head, you know, which events suit which horses. As time goes by, riders will have learned that anyway, but it's good to quantify it, and good to know where to set the benchmark, saying that, okay, if I can get this horse's dressage from a 32 down to a 31, a 30.5, that's going to really increase my chances, because I know I have then the speed and the jumping to finish the job off in the next two phases.
So who are the riders then that came to the top with those best scores for 2019, both in dressage, cross country and show jumping?
This part of the job I actually really enjoy, Chris, because the risk management side and the high performance side tend to be very slow, marginal gains that you've got to focus on a big picture and you slowly chip away at a big problem. Whereas the media side and actually pulling quite fun numbers from the sport is a piece that is always really enjoyable, highlighting performance at any level. So in the US this year, one of the ones which really stood out is the best dressage score and the best finishing score. It was 15.3. So an FOD, finishing on your dressage score, of 15.3. And that was Kaylee Beckers and Madoc Mari. Now, they came, look, there's a number of these that we'll go through today, but this one came up a number of times. I think Kaylee was originally international, or may still be an international dressage rider. I know she definitely competed in international dressage competition for a while, but I also think she may be a horse of the month coming up soon. I think we found some stuff around that horse of the month, but it was a beginner novice class in the Mid-South, and yeah, 15.3 was the standout dressage score and finishing score from the year.
That's incredible.
But I have a couple more. Yeah, it is. It's incredible, incredible score. There's a couple more. I mean, Ryan Wood, you will know there was an incredible stat last year about consecutive clear rounds for Ryan Wood. And it's something actually we don't talk about in sports. Sam mentioned the influence of dressage. And at the lower levels of the sport, if you're not performing at the really, really, I mean, we've just mentioned that 15.3, if you're not producing scores probably in the mid to high 20s, I would say it can be very difficult to actually win. You can still come in the top five in the low 30s, but very difficult to get past someone there'll always be a couple of people who will get into those mid 20s and will stay on them. So one of the things that I always find doesn't get enough coverage is actually the people who excel in the cross country phase. And the person who excels year after year in the US is Ryan Wood. This year, it is 123 clear cross-country jumping rounds from 126.
That is a statistic to be proud of, isn't it?
It's incredible. 24 different horses, 27 shows in 94 different sections. There was one day in March where he had 10 horses at Sports Days Farm. It's an incredible record, 123 from 126. And if you're not doing that and consistently finishing on your dressage score, you're not necessarily getting the plaudits for that level of performance. It was a very similar year in 2018. And Ryan Wood, again, from a cross-country point of view, is the standout rider across US eventing in 2019 with that number. One other person I would give a mention to on a similar
point. But first of all, Dom, I want to know if you ever asked him what he was doing for those other three rounds.
I mean, we actually often get that with the real high performance athletes. It is actually the question that a lot of people will turn back to and say, like, well, what happened with those three rounds? I think last year was foot perfect. So this year being three rounds, I think, Chris, that is going to bring him close enough to 250 in terms of his, I'd say it's about three or maybe five in his last 250 cross times he's left the start box.
Not to put you on the spot, but do you know who his equivalent is in the UK? Which British rider has topped that round, the clear rounds?
Izzy Taylor's been up there a few times in the past, but those numbers aren't in front of us right now. But in terms of the high quantity, but I tell you what, I'd say you'd be really struggling to get past Piggy French this year. She's been super busy and super reliable as well. So she's ticked the boxes. I mean, one of the ones on a kind of a cross country streak was Michael Young got to. At the current 4-star level, old 3-star level, both short and long, he was up around 70. It was around 75 consecutive clear rounds internationally. Now that was over an 8-year period, so that's of top level. But those, it is quite interesting when you see that level of you know, quantity and quality being mixed together, it means that these guys have you know, something serious going on behind the scenes, that they've really mastered how to train the horses. They obviously campaign them at the right levels, the levels they're ready for, and in many ways setting a really, really good example.
So all the riders want to know what they're drinking, don't they?
Spare a thought for the grooms though, that are tacking up all those horses and washing
them off. Imagine. Now I'm thinking of an expat who features in these stats too. That's James Alliston, who's based on the West Coast.
Exactly. Yep. He came up on the one interesting one, as you mentioned, what happened with the other three. James Alliston featured because he was perfect. And he was the one that has the most amount of clear rounds and managed to stay on a 100% clear rate. So that was 29 cross-country rounds, all clear. 15 different horses, 12 shows, 24 sections, and not a single jumping fault in 2019. I mean, it is possible to do, but when you start going anywhere above 10, anywhere above 15, and staying on a 100% clear rate, that's now time to really sit up and take notice. To get to 29 is the standout number, and it's the highest number in the US this year.
We talked about formula, whatever that formula is. There's a couple of riders that stand out on these stats for 2019, and they both came out of the Philip Dutton School of Riding. Ryan Wood, you mentioned, and the other is Jenny Brannigan.
Yeah, Jenny appears up there with the stats. I mean, it's great to have Jenny back, and we had that, you know, big emotional excitement at Rebecca Farm earlier in the year, and we saw Stella Artois again, and I mean, the standout one we mentioned, Ryan's incredible year cross country. He had 74 clear show jumping rounds from those 126 runs that we mentioned. So 74 from 126 actually puts him out on top. But not too far behind him was Jenny. She had 70 from 107. So a slightly higher percentage, just four rounds less in terms of the total. Jenny had 25 horses, 22 shows, and 112 different sections. Again, just incredible consistency and a strength in one phase. Something we often talk about, you know, for a rider to be able to really hold an advantage over the others when we think of this complete sport, a three-phase sport, to know that you've got one phase with such a rider influence coming through really then gives you the confidence to go and practice whatever other area that may be, whether it's your first phase or whether it's, you know, your accuracy and your rhythm in that cross country phase, and trying to use that to lessen those time penalties in some way, or ensuring that you've got that reliable cross country jumping round, so you can start to produce these numbers like James and Ryan that we're talking about. But certainly, you can really pick out Jenny again as one of the top show jumpers in the sport, and it's shone true here in the US stats for 2019.
Since you've been running Equi Ratings and had that benefit of that closer analysis of the sport, Sam, as a rider, what's really popped out to you over time?
I think that the big difference between what you need to be focusing on, whether you have aspirations of winning a team medal versus winning an individual medal, and that has been only exaggerated it will only be exaggerated when we go to the new format without the drop score, with three from three. That, as Dermot alluded to earlier, there's frequently three or four people around that 25 mark in the dressage, and they also tend to be the Philip Duttons and Boyd Martins of this world, and Mickey Youngs, Ingrid Klimkas, Piggy Frenches. And one will always finish on it or very close to it, which means that if you want to win individually, it's almost impossible to do until you can really hit that first phase. And so then, but knowing the difference, knowing that you can be a really, really valid, useful team member if you can finish on a 35, which was actually what I managed to do at the World Games in 2018. And that was really all that myself and that horse were. That was actually a championship and five-star PB for me. So, but yet I could have been very disappointed and slightly maybe even disillusioned if I was thinking that I wanted to have aspirations in the sport from an individual standpoint, because a 35 is very rarely going to do me much good individually. I think I was still 14th individually that day. But yet managed to do well for the team. So knowing the difference, but knowing that it's nearly like approaching a different sport. The way I trained last year was so different. I spent way less time in the dressage arena, having sort of torn my hair out for most of the decade, trying to improve that dressage score, because it seems to be what we all really have been trying to chase each other and catch each other's tails on. And to be honest, at 5-star level, the cross country is starting to really become quite influential again. The number of time penalties is going up and up, and I think it's because the type of horses that we have in the sport are have changed a little bit as we've gone for those really competitive scores. And as we see scores like 15.3, we do have to mention the fact that it's coming at the lower levels, and it's very hard. Ingrid Klimke occasionally does it. To finish in the teens at the higher levels, but certainly at 5-star level, it hasn't been done. No one's finished below a score of 20 there, and generally, a low 30 score in 5-star is where you want to be. So I suppose it's just that understanding that 5-star is a completely different sport to 2-star level, and team eventing is actually very, very different to individual eventing as well. So as a rider, it helps me to have a clear line of sight on what I'm trying to achieve. If my aspirations are purely to win team medals for my country, which they are, then of course I want to have my dressage as good as it can be and minimize any penalties in that phase. But I have to be really, really conscious that my reliability is at the highest level it can be.
Do you have any final thoughts on the performances this year, the stats that have stood out for you for 2019?
Around the world, I think the real standout performer around the world has been Piggy French in 2019. We've never had anyone with, I think she's 15 international wins in 2019, which has never been done before. She moved past Michael Young, who has had, you know, in the teens a number of times this decade, but nobody has ever gotten as high as she has. And she's done that all across the year. It's always a fascinating year, the year before a championship year, where you see all of the different plans being made. You see a huge amount of pressure on the rider, sometimes more than you see in the actual championship year itself. Of course, that real moment of championship eventing, as we will have at Tokyo, will be a high pressure situation. But as a number of high performance athletes are going head to head with each other, it's always an interesting year, and it can be a hard year on the riders in terms of the pressure. So yeah, I think for Piggy to perform like that, I think the one other thing I'd mention is it's the end of the decade, and that's always a good time for us to be able to run our kind of the best ofs and look at some of the big performances of the decade. I mean, you would probably have to, we would probably all have to agree that Michael Young has probably been the standout rider of the decade, finishing on his dressage score at the Olympics in 2012, the first rider to do it, and then repeating it at the Olympics in Rio in 2016. So back-to-back Olympics within the decade, both on his dressage score, both on the amazing Sam. He would probably be the standout of the last 10 years, and maybe Piggy from the UK at the standout of this year. But a fun year, a fun decade, and a championship to look forward to next year.
And for the other amazing Sam here, what were your standout moments, Sam?
Yeah, the back-to-back Olympic gold was definitely the high point, because it's very hard to do cross generation comparison to compare Labia Aesthetic Sam to Charisma is very difficult to do. Sam has won more, but there's, you know, in a way that, I mean, there are more 5-stars in the world now than there were then, but I think when he held the world, European and Olympic titles all at the same time, so he won the World Games in 2010, and really announced himself, because he I mean, that was an annihilation. That was huge. And so that era was great. And then I was actually stood on the podium beside Sir Mark Todd when he announced his retirement. And I think you could certainly argue that him coming back and winning badminton in 2011 was a huge moment for the sport, because again, it puts you in the headlines with any other sport, because for someone to have been winning at the top level in the 80s and being so dominant throughout the 90s, retire early in the 2000s, and then come back at the end of that, and he just did everything, and so to then be, yeah, to be there when he retired was pretty emotional, actually. And I don't know, will we see someone like that? I don't think there's many people we can compare him to in any sport throughout the world. I think Sir Mark Todd has been phenomenal. So quite hard to believe that it's over. I know he fooled us once by leaving and then coming back, but I think this time he really has moved on, and we will miss him, but we're extremely grateful for what he's brought to the sport.
That's for sure. No question. And that must have been a special moment for you, as you say, and a privilege to stand beside an all-time legend such as Toddy. I think that's a great way to wrap this up, because we've got some wonderful memories from this last decade as we go on now to an Olympic year. And I'm sure Equiratings will be producing some interesting stats at the end of Tokyo that we can talk about in a year's time, guys.
No, we hope so. Well, hopefully one of us will be there. That's the goal. And we're going to keep him on a horse for as long as we can in 2020 and try and achieve that goal first. But yeah, the rest of us will be behind screens and hopefully talking to you a number of times across that year. An exciting one ahead.
Super. Well, thank you, Dom, and thank you, Sam Watson, for joining us. And thanks for all you do with Equiratings. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
And now, with the annual meeting and convention upon us, we do come to the end of another president's tenure. And this is, of course, part of our series of talking to the past presidents of the USEA. In 2017, Carol Kozlowski took over the reins from Diane Pitts. And at this annual convention, she's going to be handing over the reins to Max Corcoran. And I sat down to chat with Carol recently to reflect on her presidency and the moments and events that stood out for her. Carol, welcome back to the program. And we are talking to you now as you wind down your presidency, a time to look in the rearview mirror at what you've achieved. But tell us how you're feeling now going into convention and getting ready to hand over the baton to Max.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chris. I confess, as we discussed, it's a bittersweet scenario for me. I am looking forward to bringing my tenure to a close. I actually served as president-elect for 1 year and then came in the presidency for 3 years. So it's been 4 years of really a very focused energy on the USEA and on its programs and its challenges. But I do look forward to having a little bit of free time opening up again. My students and my clients have been really patient. And I have some nice horses waiting in the wings. So I look forward to, if there is such a thing as normal, kind of getting back to my business and my family. And so it's a very rewarding time that is winding down, and I'm happy to pass it on to very capable hands.
Well, we've talked about, you know, the milestones during your tenure when we've spoken before, Carol, and that I think was a year ago at last year's convention. Now, of course, time's passed. There's a lot keeps happening in the sport. But when you look back at the very beginning and how the sport looked and the association looked when you took over, did you come into it with a to-do list of your own?
Frankly, I did. And you know, every president, I think, kind of puts their own stamp. I think that they have their focus that is important to them. And mine, I think, coming into this was reestablishing the connection of the association with our primary membership, which is our lower level members. 80% of our membership does compete at the training level and below. And I just wanted to circle back and make sure that these members felt understood, they felt recognized, they felt valued. And the same kind of with our lower level events. We tend to focus, I think, on the headlines of the larger events, you know, the bigger sort of splashier competitions and our upper level riders. But I just wanted to make sure that as I said, our primary membership did not feel like they were being kind of left out of the loop. So that was, that was probably a big part of my focus and reconnecting in the trenches. I do, I was still competing and I do a little bit of judging, but I also spend just a fair amount of time at the competition listening and talking. And so I think that was really where I had my greatest effect, although some people might disagree with that. But yeah, that was really my goal.
So what did you consider then now as your milestones, Carol, that, you know, the events and the milestones in the association's history now over those few years?
Well, you know, I to be honest, the president really is more of I don't say a manager, but kind of encourages and nurtures programs that are either just beginning or we're trying to grow. And I would say some of the bigger ones are our VIP program, our volunteer incentive program, where we are recognizing not just the importance of the volunteers, but trying to put in place a more efficient system so that events can make better use of their volunteers and that we do offer them the same national recognition that we do our riders and our events. Additionally, and I think this is probably first and more prominently in people's minds, we really are the USDA, and I think the sport worldwide, and particularly here in this country, we really are very tuned in to the safety aspects of the sport and the continuing efforts that we have to keep our competitors, our horses and our riders safe, certainly asking them and making sure that they understand the risk involved and monitoring qualifications for moving up and this and that. But I would say that frangible technology is really at an all-time high, understanding its use and how to best implement it, not just at the upper levels. We're starting to see it sort of implemented. We're actually looking at putting it into place at the training level at this point. But we have our national safety officer, Jonathan Holling, is one of our best advocates on the world stage. He's our USDF representative, our safety officer to the FEI, and he's been really wonderful in kind of bringing back information to us from the world stage. But additionally, we have more programs in place, and the primary one that I will frankly admit to putting a hard shoulder to was the LandSafe program of Danny and Kelly Warrington, the falling training that they do, teaching riders how to fall, frankly, more safely. And then I guess I will admit I was really, really proud of our American Eventing Championships this year. I felt like it took us a couple of years to sort of get to the apex of what we were trying to offer. And certainly what we were able to, I say we, I'm taking collective praise for really the staff and of the USDA and equestrian events in Kentucky, but what we were able to host at the Kentucky Horse Park this year really set an all-time high standard for the AEC. So, and that was, and the inclusion of the modified division, and that again was just kind of on the radar as I was coming into the presidency. And I will again admit to really fighting for the not just the inclusion of the modified, but kind of it getting the respect in its rightful place in our competitions. And I do believe that it has a foothold now, that people are taking that level seriously. It's the level between training and prelim now, and using it for the proper move up that it was intended for. And probably lastly, we in the course of my presidency, and again, I can't take personal responsibility for any of these. I'm just proud to have been a part of all of these milestones, but the establishment of the five-star in North America, that we finally settled at Fair Hill, and they're going forward with construction. I think that's really, really exciting for our sport here in this country. So that's it.
Well, here's a two-part question for you, Carol. What have you most enjoyed about being president of the USCA, and what it's taught you?
You know, I have to laugh because a year or so ago, somebody, actually more than one person, they say, are you having fun? You know, and the president says, well, that's probably not the right descriptor, because it is a challenging job. But I guess what I most enjoyed was probably what I just described, knowing that we had these scenarios, these programs, these opportunities in place, and working to develop them, and just watching them come to fruition. You know, I didn't mention earlier our young event horse program. We have so many the programs that were just in the developmental stage 3 or 4 years ago that I've been really lucky to have watched move in the right direction. And even on our international stage, when I came into the presidency, we were really in kind of a funk with our international teams. And here we have a new coach who by all rights, everyone is very enthusiastic for, and he's been quite methodical in his steps toward rebuilding the strength of our teams. And he got the job done this year, and we're going off to the Olympics next year, you know, kind of two steps forward, one step back, as could be expected. But it's been really rewarding to watch that go along. Having said that, I guess I would say the primary thing that this job has taught me is that you can't make everyone happy. And I know that sounds really trite, but you know, I really do like people to be satisfied with where they are in this sport. And I try not to take it personally. But everyone's goals and objectives, I think, are a bit different. And at the end of the day, they don't always mesh the way we would like them to. And so I think I've learned to, I've always had a little bit of a thick skin. So I'm trying to think, I would like to think that I have a little more of a thicker skin when people think that the direction we're going is not the direction they believe we should be going. But overall, it's a really big puzzle that we're trying to put together. And so, again, keeping everybody happy all the time is a bit of a stretch. And I've certainly learned more of that over the last few years.
Now, of course, you had the baton handed to you 4 years ago. How will that look when you hand over the baton to Max? And what would you be saying to her? Indeed, what would be the note that you would leave in the desk in your Oval Office for the next president?
You know, I've known Max for quite a long time now, and she's always impressed me as being a very, very steady, very thoughtful, and serious, although she probably wouldn't like that description because she has a wicked sense of humor. But I honestly trust her a great deal. And as I said, each president comes into the office with their focus. And I believe that the time is exactly right for somebody like Max, who is now going to turn our attention toward the care and welfare of our horses and horsemanship. And she's going to, she's already put some very, very tough questions forward. Like why are our upper level horses here in the United States appearing to break down faster than they do in other their national countries. And I just, I'm so comfortable and pleased that she is the one stepping into the office. And so if I had to leave her a few words of wisdom, I would tell her to trust her instincts and just roll with it when it looks like, there are naysayers and people who, it's tough to read negative press about yourself. I will confess it's hard to read, someone saying you don't get it, you don't understand, you don't represent my intentions. That is, it is distressing. But at the end of the day, you just have to trust that, you're surrounded by really good people. And I will say that, and I think Max knows this, but you don't know it until you work with these people. The staff that we have at the USDA is just incredible. And we are so, so lucky to have Rob Burke as our CEO. He is one of he's thoughtful, he's incisive. He has a wicked sense of humor, but he just does a great job of sort of quietly appearing kind of in the background, but just kind of holding, he's the glue that's holding the USDA together. And he is surrounded by people in the office that really, really are doing their very best to offer us the best in our sport that they can. So I that was a long-winded response to what would I say to Max, but at the end of the day, I really trust her. I could not be happier that she's the one stepping up to the plate.
Well, I know you said you wouldn't describe your tenure as fun, but I'm sure there were funny moments with those many meetings that you've had, long hours that you've served the association, Carol. Are there any that you would like to share, those memorable moments that you'll take away from this?
Oh, boy. Actually, you kind of caught me off guard with that one. So, and I'm sure there are, and I'll be annoyed that I'm not calling them to mind now. But I will say that we, again, and the board of directors, I didn't mention them. These people are all bound by the same desire for the best of the sport. But we do like to have fun, and we do enjoy a joke. And we do laugh at each other. And I will tell you that we had a team bonding experience at our most recent board meeting in Leesburg, where somebody thought it would be a good idea to take us all off to a driving range and test our golfing skills. And that was, for some people, it was really impressive. And for people like me who can barely hit a golf ball, it was a bit I was a source of amusement to many people. But, we do like to enjoy the company of each other. So I can't provide you with a funny anecdote, and I'm going to be annoyed that I didn't, well, I'm sure when we end the call. But, I think everyone goes into this with the same kind of roll with the punches attitude that we're not going to keep a stiff upper lip all the time. There's going to be we're going to enjoy a laugh or two.
Absolutely. Well, you will forever be remembered for those that were at convention last year for leading in the band. That will be an image that we will take away, Carol, from your tenure.
Oh, well, I may have won up that one. I was so distressed that I honestly thought I was going to be riding at the AEC this year in Kentucky. And when both of my horses fell off the roster, I got word that the theme of the welcome party was, what was it? Superheroes and snow cones. I did a reprisal of the costume that I wore at Rebecca a few years ago with the tutu and the whole nine yards. And so I'm probably, that's an image that will be burned in many people's minds, whether they like it or not. if you can't laugh at yourself, then, I think Max will be right there. I know Max will be right in there following up. And I can't give you any more details than that, but I know that she will be up for having a good time as well.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to that, of course. But in the meanwhile, Carol, thank you for your tenure and for your contributions all round to the association, and of course for taking the time to come on the program and look back on those last few years as president.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris.
And since we're coming to the end of our 60th anniversary with the celebrations at the annual meeting and convention, we have also celebrated them on the series of past presidents. And we have one more episode for you this year, which will take you back down memory lane even a little bit further. And Jimmy Wofford joins me to reflect on the history of the sport in the US. And that's on episode 248, which will bring our podcast to a close for 2019. I hope you'll join me then. In the meanwhile, don't forget to follow on social media at US Eventing and subscribe to the US official podcast channel wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, thank you for listening and enjoy your eventing.